food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, July 17th, 2015. Boy, it was good to hear that fanfare for the common man. I missed it for 2 days. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
What a hectic week it has been with the pressure on gold, and the pressure continued today, and a lot of buyers taking advantage of the lower prices and looking for the best deals, and we have those here right here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. But let's go ahead and take a peek at gold prices today. New York spot, we're looking at down $11 at $1,134. Less than 1%, but almost 1%, 0.99. Silver, down 10 at 1498. It went down, came back, and it's just hovered at 1498. It seems like it's like the ticker stopped at 1498. My ticker almost stopped today after seeing prices drop, but that's a different type of a ticker there. But platinum today was down 10 at 1004. Palladium was down 14, 2.25% to 619. And you could expect that the USDX is stronger, 0.22 at 97.86. Crude oil down 0.07 at 50.84. And the paper markets today, let's see if they recovered in the last hour of trade. They were down, not quite triple digits, but they came back a little bit. 33 points on the Dow, 18,086, and that was to the downside. The NASDAQ was up, though, 46 at 52.10. S&P up 2, 21.26. 10-year yield, it was like that didn't change all day, 2.35%. Same as the Euro, 109. So weird figures today in the markets. Things just didn't seem to, we know numbers just don't trade. But it certainly seems like a lot of them just didn't move. So overseas market, European markets, a lot of them were a little unchanged. You had the Hong Kong up 1%, Japan was up 0.25%. So that is pretty much it on the market report today. After the break, I got a little bit of a comparison on some $20 gold pieces. They're doing extremely, extremely well. Physical buying is strong, both in the bullion market and in the $20 gold pieces. And we'll go over some of those numbers after the the break today.
Yeah. And now what, Melody? Huh?
Well, there was a good report out today. It was about the pension funds that I saw and about how these trillions of dollars that are short falls to these municipal bonds. Houston was warned that it might be downgraded because of the mounting retirement bills. And, of course, that was the latest municipality that was put on notice. And this whole article talks about how these pension funds, how these cities shortchanged pensions for years and are under growing pressure to boost their contributions. And even after the stock market has tripled just about since 2009, they're still unable to fill those gaps that these pensions are still gapping. Janie Montgomery said a growing retirement costs are the largest cloud overhanging the $3.6 trillion municipal bond market. And they're short by $1.4 trillion. That's according to the Federal Reserve. But the whole point that I found interesting in this was that when Moody's was talking about Houston, they says that the latest municipality put on notice as the company ignores bookkeeping gimmicks that let cities mask the size of their debt for years. Now, we all know, and they're coming out and admitting that these cities are using these gimmicks in their bookkeeping to cover up the size of their debt, and yet no one does absolutely nothing about it. And it really is incredible. The only thing they can do is raise property taxes. So a lot of your property taxes are going to, help pay for these pension funds and these, and Houston, I believe, has a cap on property taxes. So they're having a little difficult time there, but in a lot of other areas around the country, a lot of these cities, communities are having the same problem. They've used these gimmicks, and no one, it doesn't seem to bother anyone, Al.
It's an ancient maxim, Melody. Those who live by the gimmicks die by the gimmicks.
Well, you know what? It's one, you can joke about it, but it's serious when it comes to people's money and retirements. It's just another sign to show how corrupt this whole system and this whole country is. It's just another part that people will lose the money that they've been planning on retiring with to live the rest of their lives, even if they do it, not all of them plan on traveling the world, but I mean just to live the rest of their lives, and it will be reduced and perhaps in many cases eliminated.
And what's the basis for these plans?
Well, you tell me.
Promises. They planned to live large when they retired because they believed promises from government, for example. It's, you're going to get a great pension. You just stick around. We like you. We're going to give you a specially good, generous, fat, large pension. And people sat back and they accepted these promises. Where if they'd had any sense, they would have taken payments. Instead of taking promises, you take payments. We live in a world right now that is overrun with promises. All debt instruments are promises to pay. That's what they are. And if you're holding your wealth in the form of pieces of paper, you are every bit as susceptible to promises that can't be kept as people who have pensions where the government has promised, oh yeah, we'll take care of you, but not right now, later. 10 years, 20 years, 30, we'll get to you, but when we do, boy, you're going to be living large. The people would have been better off to have taken payments at the time and said, forget the promises. And there's a lesson here that goes across the board. Those of you who want to maintain your wealth in the form of promises that are memorialized with pieces of paper and somebody who looks distinguished signs his name to it. Oh, yeah, you can trust us. You be dumb. Understand? I know that a lot of the promises have worked out in the past, and some of them are going to work out in the future, but we have so many promises out there, and that's what all of our debt instruments are. They're promises to pay, and we're living in a world where the promises can't be kept. And when your government behaves like Greece and goes too deeply into debt and eventually finds itself in a situation where it can't make its, it can't fulfill its promises, in the same sense they can't do it right now, they have a problem with pensions. This is not an aberration. This is a leaf in the breeze. It's just saying, look, this is the way the world's going to be. They just said, the federal government said they're going to knock off 40,000 people out of the military and another 17,000 civilian employees out of the U.S. Army. This is evidence of a government that can't keep promises. It's going broke. And the lesson in all of this, you look at this and you say, what can I do to protect myself? And one of the first things you have to do is recognize there's too many promises. They can't all be kept. And when I say they can't all be kept, I don't mean that 10% won't be kept and 90% will. I mean that ultimately those paper promises right now, my estimation is at least 80%, probably 90% can't and therefore won't be kept. And if you're hanging on to those paper promises, you're hanging on to something equivalent to a government pension fund voucher. Said, oh, yeah, we'll take care of you. You're going to have to learn to take care of yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. And that means a payment in the hand is worth two promises in the bush. You understand? Get the payment. Payment is something tangible. Not a piece of paper with a signature on it. That's not a payment. That's an IOU. That's a promise to pay. If you want to continue to rely on those promises, you know, when the time comes, and who knows, 6 months, 6 years, who knows. When the time comes, you know, don't cry about it. You're making your choice.
You know, it's not surprising. It's not shocking. But you'd think there'd be somebody, some politician trying to make his name in Houston or one of these other places and saying, hey, we need to have better accountability. Just someone, somewhere, please say it. I want to hear it. You know, and it's, but the voice is not to be heard. And it just truly is amazing. It really is.
Again, this goes to political promises in many instances. It's not all just economics. It's like these pensions. What are we talking about? If we're talking about government employees, we're talking about they were dumb enough, the government employees were dumb enough to believe the promises that government politicians made to them. Or government managers.
That's fine, Al. That's them. But there's no one now saying, hey, look at this problem. Let's fix these books. Quick.
We can't fix these books.
Cooking the books.
Oh, well, quit cooking the books. Yeah, but how are we going to do that, Melody, without admitting that they've been cooked up until now?
You would think there'd be someone somewhere, again, in this whole country, somewhere, voice.
There's only 320 million people in this country, Melody. If you're looking for someone in government who's actually going to tell the truth about the accounting procedures, 320 million isn't enough. We got to have probably 10 times that many. Maybe if we had 3 billion people, there might be one who is willing to, one politician out of 3 billion people might be willing to tell the truth.
Which is the point that there is no one there to fix it. There will be no fixes.
No, there's no fix possible.
There's no fixes. There's no, maybe this will last forever. No. You know, book cooking doesn't last forever.
But what does last, I guarantee you, the politicians who made these promises, they made sure they got paid. They got paid in the form of being reelected. They got paid in terms of bribes and stashing away money here, there, or wherever. They're not just relying on promises. They made promises, but they didn't rely on promises. People out here in public, they trusted in those promises, and they're going to pay for them. And rightfully so. This isn't going to be a situation, oh, no, the poor pensioners aren't getting their pay that they were promised. This is so sad. No, it's not sad. This is what happens. I mean, this is as old as that, the fable of the grasshopper and the ants. There is nothing to, there's no moral foundation. Oh, we've got to raise property taxes now in order to make sure these pensions are still valid. Why do we have to do that? Because we didn't fund the pensions to begin with, did we? The whole promise was that we will promise, if you will vote for me, I will promise to give you a fat pension and let your children and your grandchildren and future generations, they're going to take care of you. And people went along with it. Rather than providing for their own retirement, they said, I'll trust this politician to rob my children and my grandchildren. Now, nobody came right out and said it, but that's what it amounted to, and that's what it is. What is the moral foundation for saying, oh, we have to raise property taxes on all these people right now, all these young people that are trying to raise their own families and rest of that, in order to support a bunch of old fools who are dumb enough to trust the government? The morally correct procedure at this time is let the people who are responsible for having messed up their own retirement, let them pay for it. And let them be a lesson to future generations, where they sit back and say, boy, I'm never going to trust a politician when he promises to give me something, especially if it's 20, 30, 40 years from now. I'm going to be responsible for my own retirement, and I'm not going to listen to somebody's promise to take care of me when I get old. They were foolish. And now they're going to pay a price. And they say, oh, no, rob the kids. There's people out here right now, young people that have a house, they have a family. They want to take care of their children. Why are they supposed to take care of their grandparents? At least their grandparents' generation. Sacrifice their own children, sacrifice their own lives because grandma and grandpa were a bunch of fools? Grandma and grandpa are going to have a difficult time. It's coming at them. They will have earned it. Nobody wants to think about that. Nobody wants to say that. But that is the truth of the matter. And it is the morally correct thing. You ruined your retirement, folks. If you did that by trusting in government promises, you paid the price. And become at least a lesson to your children, your grandchildren. Let them learn. So, gee, you don't want to be like grandma. You saw what she did. She thought she was going to get a fat pension. Well, I'm not going to be dumb like that. I'm going to provide for my own retirement during my own life. And I'm going to do it by taking payments rather than promises. And I'm going to stack up those payments and payments and payments. And when time comes, I'll have something that I can depend on. But here we are. World populated by people who believe promises, and they're going to find out the promises don't work, and therefore they are going to wind up impoverished. Take a payment rather than a promise. Payments, gold and silver, promises, paper dollars. Which one do you want? If you're planning on retiring, you better get the payment instead of the promise. Well, Maldi, it's about time to take a commercial break, so shall we?
Yes, we should.
All right, let's do it. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adusk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to pull some numbers from my $20 gold piece charts, and I went back to January 2nd of this year just to see what spot was doing and in relationship to the $20 gold pieces. And since January 2nd, spot gold was $1,190. Spot gold today, at this time, was $1,140. Now, we do know gold went a little bit lower, but at this point in time, it was $1,140 for spot gold. That's down 4.3%. If we look at Mint State 64, $20 gold pieces, they are up 11%.
In the same time, gold is down.
Same time frame.
That's 15%. That's more. That's close to a 16% spread.
Yeah. 65 $20 gold pieces are up 13%. Mint State 65 $20 gold pieces, they are up 15%. So it really is an incredible run on those coins. Now, on the lower grades, we also have increases, not to the same degree. Let me figure the percentage difference was 3% gain for the lower grades. But the big moves were in the higher grades. So, folks, this is just to show you how important it is to be diversified in your portfolios. You should listen to to some of these people who tell you, oh, you don't want those. Who's going to buy them when you need to sell them? And all the other silly reasons they give you why you shouldn't buy $20 gold pieces. They play a very important part into your portfolio. And they can be like the seesaw. You can have bullion go down, and these coins can go up. You can have bullion go up, and these coins can come down. What a perfect way to balance a portfolio. And certainly the long term is certainly more positive. Certainly we'll see increases in all of these, whether it be bullion or $20 gold pieces. But this gives you an idea of what they can do when you have heavy pressure on gold. So if you need to add some of these $20 gold pieces, if you don't have any and you want to add some to your portfolio, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The wholesale on Mint State 64 $20 gold pieces, it's higher than what I was selling them at a week ago. Okay? Wholesale is higher than what I was selling them at a week ago. So a great buying opportunity, and so get them while you can. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. I wanted to just mention a little bit about today. Al, I don't know if you have any comments you wanted to mention. You had the Chattanooga shootings that are leaving four Marines and the gunman dead. The case is being handled at the terrorism probe. And, of course, they haven't yet announced the motive for the shooting. And it's just, but the FBI, of course, is involved. And this fellow, I believe, was a supporter of the Islamic State. And
Muslims are advocating, the Islamic State at least, is advocating that no matter where you are, if you're Muslim, strike out against the U.S. any way you can.
Yes.
Doesn't matter if you're in New York City or Kuwait or Saudi Arabia or South Africa or Paris or Paris, France. Do what you can at that point, right? They are advocating that should be a public movement against anything associated with the United States. And this guy apparently succumbed to that rationale. My understanding is that he was born in Kuwait. He's a native of Kuwait who emigrated to the United States. And he has become increasingly religious, increasingly Islamic in the last, last few years. He was religious, but he wasn't fanatic about it. He had become increasingly serious about his faith in the last several years. You know, it illustrates a point. And the point is that you can't easily mix religions. You might be able to mix races, right? But you can't easily mix religions. And insofar as my faith leads me in one direction, if I stand up here and I shout about it, there will be people who will inevitably be led in a different direction by their faith. They're not going to like what I have to say, and I may not like what they have to say about their faith. There is a natural antagonism because virtually all of the faiths claim that theirs is the one true faith. The only way you can get salvation is through that one faith, and that may be true, but it's not true for every faith. I mean, if it's true that there's only one way to get to God, there's true that there's a bunch of faiths that are false. You start mixing people together, different religions, and this is an oil and water kind of situation, and you're bound to have something violent take place before you're done. We are foolish to allow Muslims to emigrate into this country. And I don't say that to disparage Muslims, I don't say it to disparage their faith, but I say it because I recognize that you cannot expect to mix significantly different faiths without coming to violence. This guy in Chattanooga is, in my opinion, an illustration of the principle. It happens here in this country. It happens in the Middle East, where you have Jews and Muslims and sometimes Christians. There is just something where people are susceptible to a certain kind of violence when they are of different faiths, and they engage in holy war. From their perspective, the murder of whoever it is that doesn't believe in your particular brand of religion, that murder is service to God, right? And we are all susceptible to justifying, we kill that guy because, he's of a particular faith. He's not of the true faith, which you and I are. There is how do you protect against it? It seems to be something that's just built into human nature. We're not going to reason our way past that. And the way you protect it is say, okay, you Muslims stay over there, and we Christians are going to stay over here. And the Jews are going to go this place, the Hindus go over to this place. Yeah, we'll meet at the borders from time to time, and we'll visit and whatever. But we're going to tend to stay out of each other's sphere of influence. And if we can do that, maybe we can avoid some of this violence. And if we can't, then we'll have war. But if we start trying to mix multiple religions, multiple races, into what was formerly a nation, that mixture may make perfect sense in an economy where we are deemed to be nothing more than economic units. But in a nation where we have certain spiritual, racial, physical attributes that distinguish us from other groups, it's not really a good idea. You know, we see African Americans in this country, there are an unknown percentage, but apparently significant, that bear a great animosity to the United States, to the people that are the white people that are here. How long have we been working on this thing? How long have we had to resolve this conflict that seems certain to continue, you know, long after you and I are dead and gone? Isn't there a lesson there? Maybe you ought to just keep to your own. Maybe they ought to keep to their own. And it's not just me saying so. There's plenty of black people sit back and say, don't associate with the white folk. We see something happen in Chattanooga that illustrates that point, and if we're going to bring more Muslims into this country, no matter why they come here, right, they may come here with the best intentions, inevitably they're going to feel a certain amount of discrimination, they're going to feel a certain amount of injustice, rightly or wrongly, whether it's imaginary or it's real. They're going to come to that in the same way that blacks blame whitey for everything that goes wrong in their lives. And when that happens, it predisposes people to violence of the sort we see in Chattanooga. And I don't know that there's a solution to any of this. I don't say there's not a solution. I don't have a solution. But you can minimize the problem. You can recognize and anticipate the problem. Just say, look, let's not bring any more Muslims into this country. It's not going to go well for us. Everybody knows it. Anybody who looks at this is not going to work out.
There's also what's going on, and I'm not sure if this is the latest update on this. Coast Guard Sector New York at Fort Wadsworth on Staten Island, Coast Guard Station Sandy Hook at Fort Hancock in the Highlands, New Jersey, are on lockdown. You have heavily armed New York police officers set up a checkpoint on the approach to the outbound Outer Bridge crossing, which connects Staten Island to New Jersey. The officers appears to be checking vehicles that were heading to New Jersey. So I'm not sure all what that is.
It's probably a bunch of Trump supporters. They're known. They're known to be a problem.
But the
own to terrorism and the rest of that because they don't support the existing.
But I guess there also there's two. Let me see if I can find some other information. They were on lockdown, so I'm not quite sure exactly how severe it was or what was the defining factor of that. But of course, when you have shootings and so forth, yeah,
keep
you get
out of
a little.
Bars, that's all. They were all good. They're locked down, so they can't go to the saloons before happy hour. That may be what's going on. I don't doubt they have a serious reason for these lockdowns. Something's going on. You know, we're going to see more of this. And it might be, then realistically, it might be that if everybody in this country was the same race, spoke the same language, went to the same church, one of us would still have picked up an AK-47 and gone over and shot up the Marine recruiting office and gone after some other military personnel. It may be that one of us would do the same thing. But when you see someone who is Muslim, someone who is black, someone who is Hispanic do the very same thing, it creates a certain amount of fear. You know, if it was just another white guy, if I just heard that some white guy shot up a Marine recruiting office, I wouldn't put much in it. How about that? You know, stuff happens. Well, when I hear a Muslim did it, that predisposes me to think, uh-oh, we probably shouldn't have any more Muslims around here. This is maybe rational, maybe not rational, but what I'm trying to get to is still it's the way people tend to think about the strangers among us. And insofar as we know we have more strangers among us and the numbers are growing all the time, it puts you in a position where you feel a certain level of anxiety that you might not feel if the country was essentially homogenous. Now, I know a homogenous nation is not, it certainly hasn't been that way for a long time, maybe never was, maybe never will be. But it's a kind of ideal. And when we see these things happen that are perpetrated by strangers, aliens, outsiders, different religion, different race, it just brings out the worst in all of us. And if we keep bringing that out, keep allowing it to happen, guess what's going to follow? Sooner or later, somebody's going to go to a mosque and shoot it up. Some Christian is going to go shoot up a mosque. And people, oh my God, what's happened? The solution to the problem is don't have the problem. And that means somebody's got to have enough foresight in the first place. Say, look, you're nice people, but you stay in your part of the world. We're going to stay in our part of the world. And, you know, we'll swap some oil for Cadillacs or whatever. That's what you want to do. But you stay over there, we'll stay over here.
Well, I think after the break, we still have 2 minutes. Some inflation data came out today. U.S. consumer prices rose for the fifth straight month in June. We've seen gasoline prices and some other goods increased. Signals a little bit of inflation that's coming into the market. And, of course, that strengthens Janet Yellen's case for an interest rate hike later this year. Al?
Yeah, but the Labor Department said consumer price index rose 0.3%. That's a triviality. That was last month. After increasing 0.4% in May, 0.3% in June, 0.4%, that's on an annual basis. That's not 0.3% in 1 month. That's on an annual basis. If it was 0.3% in 1 month, the annual inflation rate right now would be running about 3.6%. And if it were, Janet Yellen wouldn't be complaining about, oh, we've got to try to achieve 2% inflation. And the point I'm making is that 0.3% inflation last month is a triviality. They're shooting for 2%. It would have to go up at least 6 times. The current inflation rate would have to increase by a factor of 6 before we got to a point where Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve says, okay, we got 2%, we're good now. And the implication is they can talk about inflation, but we're much closer to deflation. We have such a little bit of inflation that we're really very close to deflation, which is potentially dangerous. Let's take a break. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we were talking a little bit about inflation. We're going to call that a wrap?
Oh, I don't know. The point is that the inflation rate is, in fact, so low at 0.3% last month. 0.3%. They're looking for 2%.
That's their numbers, too.
That's their numbers. I know. They're not necessarily even correct. But it means that we're certainly close to deflation. More, the article continues. It says last month's increase pushed the year-on-year consumer price index rate into positive territory for the first time since December. What that means is the first 4 months we've had deflation. Now, starting in June, we've had minor inflation. May and June, we've had minor inflation. I'm going to make you a bet that the average of the 4 months of minor deflation plus 2 months of minor inflation, I'll bet you that for the year, it's been deflationary. And this is consistent with some of the things we've seen. Prices are falling. Not everywhere, not all over, not absolutely, but the tendency is, for the moment, more toward deflation than inflation, and it's not a new phenomenon. The government spent $3 trillion trying to stimulate the economy after the 2008 Great Recession began in the form of quantitative easing. They injected supposedly close to $3 trillion into the U.S. and global economies trying to get things running. They arguably prevented a crash. We didn't collapse, didn't start the Great Depression in a way that was obvious, but they didn't really succeed in stimulating the economy either. They didn't succeed in causing the kind of inflation that they'd hoped would stimulate the economy. And what that implies is that the forces of deflation, which are almost always associated with an economic depression, whatever's causing deflation, whatever's predisposing us to deflation, these forces are apparently too powerful for the Federal Reserve and federal government to overcome at this time. And they are being allowed to proliferate simply because the government said, look, we've spent $3 trillion trying to get inflation going. We haven't succeeded. It means there's something else going on in the economy. There's something in the American psyche. There's something in the world psyche. There are deeper forces that are pushing us, predisposing us to deflation. And those forces aren't being named publicly. They're talking about, in this article, it said the energy-driven disinflationary trend appears to have run its course. By disinflationary, they mean we're still inflation. We're still in inflation. I mean, 0.1% inflation is inflation. It's disinflationary as compared to 2%. If the inflation rate falls from 2% to 0.1%, that's disinflationary, but it's not deflationary until it falls below the zero and we get into, you know, we fall from 2% inflation to 1% deflation. If we fall into, when we fall below that zero line and we get into deflation, that's deflationary. Above it, it's inflationary. And if the inflation is growing less, it's disinflationary. They're saying here the energy-driven disinflationary trend appears to have run its course. They are blaming the falling energy prices for disinflation, which is close. It's not quite deflation, but close. And I'm sitting back and I'm saying, look, if the energy prices have fallen, that means gasoline should be cheaper, the energy it takes to heat and cool your house should be cheaper, the lights cost less to run the lights. In theory, the savings on energy should be stimulating the economy. But they're trying to blame the falling prices on and deflation. They're trying to blame it on falling energy prices. And to some extent, that's true. But I still think it's not the whole truth. I think it's something of an illusion. There is something else going on in the economy that is predisposing us to enter into a deflationary period. And it's not just mathematical. There's something psychological about it. Something's happened. People are a little more inclined to save than they are to spend. They're becoming more reasonable. They're not going to take a trip to Tahiti. All right, we're not going to take our vacation to Tahiti and spend I don't know how many thousands of dollars to go to Tahiti. We're going to just kind of sit around the house and go swimming. We'll go to the local water amusement park a couple of times, rest, that sort of thing. Something's happened, and I don't know how they're going to overcome it. So far, the $3 trillion was not enough. It's been able to put it in abeyance, but it hasn't been enough to overcome the point I'm just trying to get to. There's something deflationary going on in the world right now. And it doesn't mean that we're absolutely going into a depression, and it doesn't mean that deflation is going to persist forever. But there are forces at work that the government is unable so far to overcome. And the reason I assume the government, I've talked about it a bunch of times, government is going to be hurt by deflation. Deflation hurts debtors, government's biggest debtor in the world. It owes more money than anyone else. It's going to be paying off its debts with more valuable dollars. It will tend to push the government toward bankruptcy or to a moment where it has to say, gee, folks, I'm sorry, but we really did think we could pay up, make payments on all of these pension plans, but because of deflation, wasn't any government mismanagement, you understand, but because of deflation, we're not going to be able to keep our promises. Government has an incentive to stop deflation, and yet they haven't done that in the last 15 months. And I'm wondering if the reason might not be that the only value the U.S. dollars had for the, since 1971 became a pure fiat currency, and shortly thereafter they cut a deal, turned the dollar into the petrodollar. If you wanted to buy petroleum products on the global international market, you had to have dollars. That demand, the resulting demand for dollars around the world, even though the dollar was worthless, you had to have it if you wanted to buy petroleum, it became a petrodollar. It was effectively backed by the world's petroleum. And it remained as a world reserve currency because of the petroleum backing. It was its status as world reserve currency that gave the dollar value. Perceived value, even though it was intrinsically worthless, it overcame the status of as a mere fiat currency. When Saddam Hussein started selling his crude oil for euros, the U.S. dollar index began to fall from 125 now down to 97, 98. As the dollar lost value. People lost interest in using it for international commerce. The demand for dollars diminished. The dollar was less valuable. Inflation was good for stimulating our economy, but it didn't do the dollar any good in international trade. And maybe what's driving deflation today is that the government is trying to shore up the dollar on the international market. Deflation is bad for the American economy. It's bad for American exports. But if the dollar is gaining value on the U.S. dollar index, it means that foreign countries are going to sit back and say, yeah, I'll take some dollars. Give me some. I like dollars. They're growing in value. Well, as long as that's true, the dollar can hold on to its status as world reserve currency. But if the dollar continues to inflate, it's going to tend to lose its status as world reserve currency. And once that's gone, there's nothing to hold the dollar up and say, look, this is a valuable piece of paper. The world is going to say, no, it's not. That's just an old inflated fiat dollar. It doesn't have any value at all. You know, you can hear the commercials on the program. The dollar's lost value as measured with gold. It's gone from $35 an ounce to now $1,100 and change. Right? It's a factor of 32 times. It's lost, 97% of its value in the last since 1971. And then 45, 46 years, whatever it is, 44. Maybe the reason the government is tolerating deflation is because the government is doing it to try to shore up and support the fiat dollar. And if that's true, and it's just conjecture, I'm not saying that's God's truth, but if that's the truth of the matter, it means that the government is prepared to risk collapsing the economy. They are prepared to risk pushing us into a depression in order to save the fiat dollar. Now, that's interesting. You know, if it were true that the government was more interested in saving the dollar than it was in saving the economy, and that means your job and your home, your standard of living, that would be a very interesting argument. It would be a very interesting fact if that were true. It would be the sort of thing where you could say, what the heck are you people doing up there in Washington? Who are you really representing if you're more interested in saving the fiat dollar than you are in saving the American economy and the people and their jobs and their standard of living? So what do you think, Melody? Do you think that it might be that the government is allowing deflation? Does that make any sense to you as a form of protecting the fiat dollar? Or do you think that's too far out?
Well, I'm not sure the government is, they're doing what is needed to be done. And again, I mean, is it just so that the other currencies are so weak it's pushing ours up in order to maintain, or are they allowing it to happen? So, I mean, there's different ways that you can view it, and you're right, we certainly do see the various, you can see prices go down in some, but I mean, they're never the needs, what needs. You have egg prices that jumped 13% last month, due to the avian flu, and prices that jump significantly, they usually will come down for, if they have the reason like the flu, but they will never come down to the starting point of where they started to increase. So, there's more inflation in this economy than they admit because, I mean, they just, boxes are getting smaller. The product is getting smaller. It used to be 4 ounces. Now it's, 3 3/4, and it's 3 1/2. And it's 3, and people don't even know the difference that they're getting shortchanged. But the prices don't go down. The prices stay the same. So they've really covered up the true rate of inflation in order to create the numbers that they need so they can continue their monetary policy. I don't even know what you want to call it anymore. It's so destructive and so, complex.
Data-driven is part of it. I'm not even sure that they have a policy right now other than to just hang on. Janet Yellen says she'll do what the data tells her to do, which means she is simply going to react and hope for the best. They don't have a policy where they say, okay, we'll do this, then we'll do this, then we'll do this, and this will achieve our objective of A. We want A. We want to do that, and therefore we will take these steps. They're just trying to hang on right now as best they can. Or at least it looks that way. I can't tell you that's absolute truth of the matter, but it looks like nobody has a policy, which again is if that were true, that would indicate that we are in peril. And even though things may appear to be running along fairly smoothly, not too much problem, if nobody's in control, then we really don't know what's going to happen next. Might go up, might go down, might move sideways, but we don't really know if no one's in control. And I get I'm increasingly persuaded by the idea that government's not really in control, and government knows it. They don't want to tell us that. Again, it's a little bit of the pay no attention to the little man behind the curtain. And that's how the government is operating right now, and they've got that great and terrible Oz, the ball of fire, very scary. Well, I don't know if anybody's, is anybody really controlling that ball of fire anymore, or is this... It is a puzzlement, and all you can do, again, you just have to look at fundamentals. Here's a fundamental for you. People, we've had a very difficult time in gold in the last couple of years, but since 1971, gold has increased by a factor of 32, 33 times. That's a trend. That's a, 1971, 29, 39, 44 years. We've had difficult 4 years in the last 4 years, but the previous 40 were something almost extraordinary. Is that 40-year trend really over? Are we really in a long-term down for gold, or is the 40-year trend a recognition that we have fiat currency? It has to become, they have to make it worth less and less and less and less and less. To me, that's fundamentals. To me, that's one of those things where you sit back and say, look, gold's going back up. When's it going to happen? Don't know. But it's going to go back up, and it will go up dramatically. And what we've seen in the last several years will be a thing of the past, an aberration, something maybe to laugh about, but it'll take us a few years before we can. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. We're done for the weekend. We'll be back next Monday, Melody and I. In the meantime, hope you have a good weekend. Hope the good Lord blesses you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.